This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. Hey gamers, if you've been waiting for the perfect time to give your setup the ultimate boost, I've got some great news. Alienware is having their annual Tech Days event, and that means you can score some pretty crazy deals right now. Save big on new Alienware PCs like Aurora laptops and the Area 51, their most powerful desktop. They both take performance to the next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. There's also some pretty serious deals on Alienware displays, accessories, and more. Check it all out at Alienware.com/deals. The whole reason for this annual Tech Days event is to celebrate you. So I take a good look at these prices and exclusive benefits before it ends. It's easy to save. Just visit Alienware.com/deals and snag yourself some great gear at very upgrade-friendly prices.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Boom! That bass comes in and rocks your socks. It's time for the greatest of talks. It's DLC, and wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we're so glad you've chosen to tune into DLC. Hey, are you one of our geeks and sneaks? Are you out there on a run right now listening to us, helping you power through your workout? We're going to be with you for 90 plus minutes in your ear holes with gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor, Linda. Oh, Linda! Linda made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who will be playing the new Star Wars trailer on a loop for two full months, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, I did dress my daughter Claire in a Princess Leia onesie today. She was born on May the 4th, so you know she's has to live with it forever. So
she has a lot of midichlorians, evidently. That's
so many. She changes her own diaper just like mentally. It's pretty dope.
I wish I could see that. Today's the day, man. Are you excited? Are you? This tickets go on sale today too.
Yeah, I might look at tickets. I haven't watched any of the trailers. I'm not as unsullied, hashtag unsullied, as you are with things. But this, I kind of want to just go in and see. So I will probably look to buy tickets. But
I have a team. We have a team set up. We're buying 11 tickets. We have division of labor. There's multiple people logging on at multiple times. We're attempting to see it at the historic Man's Chinese Theater. It's a whole thing today. There's like a massive email chain. It's a whole thing.
Well, I'm glad to know that I wasn't a part of that.
It's like a slash film thing. You wouldn't understand. We are not talking about Star Wars, this episode, although we could, because there's video games that are coming out with it. But, because we're talking video games, we got a great guest. DLC is always your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week we're excited because DLC once again stands for Director Who Loves Cats. Because returning to DLC to secure his friend of the show status, we have art director and video games writer at Entertainment Weekly and self-professed feline aficionado, Mr. Aaron Morales. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, I have to tell you a quick story, Aaron. I was asked by the Marvel, what's the name of that game? The top-down Diablo-esque Marvel
Heroes?
Marvel Heroes, yeah. Marvel Heroes 2015, which is now 2016. I was asked by them to host their Comic-Con panel, which I did. And we, on that panel, announced some of the new characters that were coming out. And one of them was the new Miles Morales Spider-Man model. And as I announced it, I said, Aaron Morales. At Comic-Con, and everyone booed me. And I was like, oh, no, I know his name. I promise I know his name. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you've been reading my fanfic, because I've been working really hard on it. And very excited to join the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It sucks that you got bit by that radioactive spider, but, like, you know, total upside on it.
But your costume between, Miles is, and then the hood from Spider-Gwen, plus the underarm webbing from Old School Spectacular, you've really put together a good outfit.
Yeah. Well, and if you could see, I'm sitting in my office right now, and I have a huge Spider-Man decal on my door that my coworkers put up for my birthday.
So it's kind of obvious your secret identity isn't that secret anymore?
Yeah, it's not so secret.
You have the coolest name, because also the newest Heroes of the Storm character is Lieutenant Morales. So
we're taking over.
You're just basically everything I like. all right, guys, enough name talk. We can get to the beginning of the show, which is, of course, Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. As a listener, you can always submit stories for our consideration by using our hashtag on Twitter, that's DLCSOTW, or by visiting our subreddit at 5x5dlc.reddit.com. We also have been getting a lot of great stuff to our Gmail, which is dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Lots of cool feedback there. Let's jump right in. Aaron, you have first pick of stories. So what would you consider to be your story of the week?
There's some good stuff to choose from. I'm going to go for the most immediate one, which is the PS4 price cut that just happened. I guess it was last week. And so, you know, Sony finally announced that they're officially dropping the price to $349, which puts it in direct price parity with the Xbox One and, you know, just a little bit more than the Wii U bundles. And it's very interesting because, you know, we've been going into this holiday season and Sony doesn't have a ton of exclusives for PS4 this holiday. But this is, I think, a really good way to compete with that, with the Halos and the Tomb Raiders. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It is absolutely timed with, like, the big Halo drop. And I do think it's an aggressive move. Not only is the base price of the system $349, but it affects every bundle. So every bundle that the PS4 is offering or that Sony is offering on the PS4 is also similarly reduced $50, which is pretty cool. I think this is this was due. I think it needed to be this needed to happen. As you said, they don't have the big game this year. They have a lot of great big third-party games for sure, and it's certainly winning the console war, if you want to talk in those terms. They are certainly well ahead in sales, and it's an aggressive move to make sure they maintain that lead. I think that I honestly think that we're going to see a lot of Xbox Ones sold this year. I think this is going to be the Christmas of Xbox One, just because of those cool two exclusive games that I think a lot of people are going to have been waiting to buy that system for. And I think you're going to find a lot of people that already own PS4s are probably going to add Xbox One to their shelf. That's just my guess. But what do you think, Christian?
Yeah, I think it's a great time to dive into this generation, regardless of the console, if you haven't already. Both have appealing bundles. I think Microsoft has, I'm trying not to exaggerate, I think 17, 13, 10 plus bundles this year going into the holiday, I believe. And, you know, they're competitively priced with different games and mix and match and whatever. I think if you haven't dove in yet, I'd probably do the Ori bundle, which I think is like Ori, Gears, and Rare Replay, I think, is that bundle. But PlayStation dropping its price, that's great. I mean, why wouldn't you be excited about that unless you bought it, your PlayStation, whatever, just before the price adjustment period works, so like, you know, 2 weeks and a day or something like that, so you can't get the cheaper price. I'm not sure if, you know, speculating in PDs, if Microsoft will dominate this holiday or not, just because while they do have those two big exclusives, you know, Sony has the Call of Duty exclusive, quote-unquote, this year for people that are looking to do that. The marketing push for Star Wars is so heavy this year, and that game is going to be huge, and it's, you know, play it best on PlayStation or whatever that tag is. Yeah. And it's going to be a competitive holiday season, but I think either way you look at it, a price cut by Sony is a good thing for consumers, and hopefully just continues this. It's been pretty cutthroat. Hopefully it continues. And when, you know, every time Sony did a bundle, Destiny, Microsoft is like, hey, buy our console and, I don't know, get a free game, Destiny, whatever. And I like seeing stuff like this. So hopefully it continues.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about Star Wars Battlefront, because all the commercials that I've seen for it, they're PlayStation commercials, but they look like Star Wars Battlefront commercials. And they really are tying that game to that system. So I wonder how much effect that's going to have. It's going to be an interesting season. And I think, as we've all said, it's a win-win for consumers. If the price is going down and the competition is heating up, I think that's a good thing for everybody.
Yeah.
I want to tie, since you talked about, we were talking about Microsoft bundles, and I don't think either of us are going to use this as our story of the week. I want to tie in another story that I thought was interesting this week. There was an interview posted on Polygon.com with Mike Nichols from the marketing officer for Xbox, talking about attach rate with Kinect and the use of Kinect. You know, talking about Xbox bundles. Very few of the bundles at this point actually include a Kinect. And they're about to roll out this big new this OS. I almost said iOS because I'm used to saying this big new OS update for the front end of the Xbox, which is going to very much de-emphasize the Kinect. No longer will there be gesture controls, which, side note, thank God, because I'm sick of just moving my hand and then having a little hand appear on my screen. But it's interesting what they're saying, that most of the people that bought the Xbox One with a Kinect still use it. That the vast majority of the people, they say their data shows that the vast majority of the people that bought with Kinect still use it for all the things that don't involve gaming. Probably because there's no games that really use it. But I'm certainly an example of that. I use my Xbox One as a pass-through for my television, and I use my Kinect every day. I turn my Xbox on with it. I adjust things with it. I tell my thing to pause sometimes with using my voice. Aaron, do you have an opinion on what Kinect has become and this data that a lot of people are still using it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's become exactly what you just said. It's just a nice little interface thing. And I use mine every single day whenever I turn my Xbox on, whenever I tell Netflix or Hulu to pause. My favorite thing is Xbox record that. Sorry if someone's playing and that just recorded it for them. but I mean, I love that thing. Like anything you're playing, you know, you do something awesome and you just say Xbox record that, and then you've got your clip right there. And I think that's a really cool use of it. I'm really excited for the gesture controls to go away, because every time I pick up a glass, like it will just show a hand and yeah, no matter what. And I didn't even know you could do that until that happened. So,
why would anybody want to do that?
And exactly. And if you do any Twitch streaming too, then that's your camera and your microphone. Yeah. So I think it still has some utility.
For sure. And I would say also that it's interesting to me that the whole bonus to when they announced the Kinect bundled with Xbox One out of the box was that they knew everybody was going to have that. And then as soon as they took it out, they created the situation that they've had before, which is what this interview is talking directly to, which is this idea that as we update the OS on the Xbox, we now have to think about people that don't have Kinect. And it's like, well, the whole point was that you weren't going to have to think about that. I guess it's good because it reduced the overall price of the system and gave people options. But you and I are both examples of people that still use it. Christian, your Xbox One doesn't have a Kinect, is that right?
It does. It's in a separate room. I don't use it at all.
You keep the Kinect in a separate room?
Well, yeah. I mean, I moved my Xbox into my office, and I didn't bother trudging the Kinect over there.
You just have the Kinect camera pointed at, like, old dolls in the corner. You want to watch something, Microsoft? Watch this.
Yeah. I don't know. I see the utility in it. I know that I don't have generic newscaster voice and, you know, my voice is a little nasally or whatever, but I'm not sure what the reason, like, again, apologies if this triggers anything for anyone. When I say, hey, Siri, that works just fine for me, but Kinect voice controls never really worked that well. I don't know if that was sitting too far away from my TV or, you know, the Kinect itself, and I just didn't find it useful. So when I moved the Xbox, I had no reason to move over the Kinect. I think voice controls are the best thing that it does, but I also think it's a shame that they didn't take the time to integrate a microphone into the controller, maybe the way Fire TV has that. I think the new Apple TV has that as well, because that kind of stuff could be used for everybody. You know, both you and Aaron said the gesture controls were the things you didn't like, so I think it's easy to get rid of that and keep the convenient stuff, but I guess it wasn't in the cards.
Yeah, I definitely use it to, if the phone rings, I'll use it to mute the television or pause the television without having to search for a remote. That's awesome. But I definitely have to get stern with it sometimes, especially to turn on.
Let me hear it.
Huh?
Let me hear Jeff Stern, Jeff.
I can't because it'll happen. I'm too close. It'll happen in my room. You know, if I have to repeat myself a few times, it's like, okay, we're getting serious, Xbox. Come on. But I never have to do that with Alexa. Alexa's very nice, although she's listening to me right now too.
She's judging you. She is judging you so hard right now.
Interesting in the chat room, Passion of the Nerd said that what we were talking about as far as splintering the market is the reason that Morpheus isn't going to go well as well. Although it's not called Morpheus anymore. That's going to be interesting to see, too. Anytime the market is splintered like that, you never know what your install base is. So,
Aaron, can I ask you, we talked about this a little bit on Twitter back and forth, but I'm curious to get your take, because the Kinect's not the bulkiest thing, but and I think we'll talk more about a race wheel setup that you have later. And you don't have to confirm one way or another. I don't know what NDAs are for things, but I imagine you have drums and maybe some guitars and some other things sitting around your place, and maybe a briefcase that houses a controller and a Kinect and then a PlayStation camera. Like, what is your personal, you live in New York. Like,
yes.
Do you love all of this? I mean, is your TV wall mounted? Where's your Kinect? Where's your, like, what's your struggle? How do you deal?
it's not too bad. I actually did get rid of my drums just because they were the hardest, bulkiest thing to store. And I did not have any guitars. I got rid of all those too until very recently. So now I'm still trying to figure that out. But fortunately, in my place, I have kind of an outside storage area where I can put some stuff.
A trash can? Is it a big trash can?
It's a dumpster. It's a dumpster. It's out the back.
I quote unquote outside storage area.
So I have a hallway where I can store some of that bulkier stuff because I'm not allowed to have that just sitting out in my apartment. My partner would not go for that. So it does have to be stored. And yeah, it is. The steering wheel in particular is absurdly large.
But Kinect isn't that, like?
No, Kinect's fine. Like, I have the PlayStation camera sitting there too, and they're just sitting right by my sound bar, and they just kind of blend in as, like, you know, black electronics. So it's more the wheels and the guitars that are a little bit harder to make a case for, because they just, you know, they just don't look classy.
No, they do not. They do not. And there's only so much closet in the world. Christian, what is your what's your story of the week?
It has to be this Wall Street Journal news story or article that they put up about developer kits are going out for the Nintendo NX now. And I think the biggest thing for me, the takeaway, is that it will be a hybrid console, hybrid being home and handheld, which I love because everybody's like, I that's what I said. I predicted it. Like, no, I said that too, but none of us predicted it. We all just parroted when someone else said it. It doesn't matter. But they also say it's going to have, quote, industry-leading chips, which is the thing in this article the most that is, you know, a feather tickling your toe or whatever. Because holy moly, what does that mean? Industry-leading chips for...
I love the industry-leading chips. They were amazing at Coachella this year.
they actually are pretty good. I saw them at the Troubadour with Oh Wonder, but it doesn't matter.
People don't realize that DLC actually stands for industry-leading chips.
Your best one yet, Jeff. You have a gift. But is it industry-leading for a handheld, which I would also wonder, does that include cell phones? Because, you know, the new Google phones are pretty impressive. The new iPhone is pretty impressive. Is it industry-leading, meaning PlayStation 4? Like, anyway, it's such a vague term. But the promise of this thing, if it is that hybrid console that all of us have fantasized about, the home, you take it with you on the go, and it's more powerful than the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, like, I'm day one. You know, I'm camping for this thing, right? This is the dream.
Yeah. It's exciting.
No question mark, exclamation point. Yeah.
No, I want it to have I want it to lead the dindustry in chips. I definitely want that. No, we've all wanted that since, I don't even know, when was the last time? Like, Super Nintendo was the last time that Nintendo like was on the cutting edge of technology.
They did the industry for sure. But they also say the company's on track to introduce it as early as next year, which my only concern is then that it's the PlayStation 4.1. You know what I mean? It's not
right. Not
really industry leading because PlayStation 5 is 2 years away. Whatever. Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, I also agree with the other part of your setup there, which is that industry leading chips compared to what? Compared to portable devices? Compared to consoles? Compared to PCs? Compared to what? I'm very intrigued, and we have, since the first mentioning of the NX, we and, as you said, others have said over and over that why does not Nintendo combine their two markets and create a you know, one ring to rule them all and have the thing be both the DS and the home console all in one. It goes with you and locks in, you know, it plugs back into the home base or whatever. I think that's a cool idea, and I think that would be really exciting. But what does that thing look like? And if it's truly portable like that, is it an industry-leading chip in comparison to the iPad Pro?
I'd love it if it's a PlayStation 2 chip. And the argument is the PlayStation 2 is the most sold console ever. It's an industry-leading chip architecture. The Emotion Engine is back, baby.
What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, that's a good question. If it is just like handheld industry leading, then I'm not as excited. I think even if it is PS4, Xbox One level, then that is pretty interesting, especially if it's in within, you know, a year or so. I think the PS4 and Xbox One are going to be around for quite a while. So it would actually be, you know, somewhat on par, if not a little ahead of that. That sounds pretty good to me, versus like constantly being a step behind. Because even when Wii U had a good year launch, head start, and yet it still didn't look any better than the 360 or PS3 at the time. Now it probably does. But so, you know, if we're talking about a very capable handheld, you know, it's basically, imagine if you could take your Wii U gamepad with you and play your same game, not being tethered to your TV. I think that's pretty appealing. As someone who has a commute, and I would
think,
just
imagine if
love
you
it.
Can take your PlayStation 4 with you, right? I mean, that's what I'm hoping for parity, like getting in. I know there's the Wi-Fi issue or whatever, so this is a dumb example, but playing Battlefront or Halo, getting some Halo in on your commute and then continuing same Halo when you get home. Like, that's...
Isn't there a reason why we don't have those in the handhelds and why they need to be larger boxes? Isn't the whole reason is that...
Yeah, lazy scientists.
Lazy scientists. See.
If we can get a man on Mars and he can live there for years, I'm just saying...
That was fiction. That was fiction, Christian. I don't think you understand how movies work.
I saw it on a big screen. I'm pretty sure it was real. Donald Glover was in it.
Yeah, but Steve Jobs is real and that's a movie.
Yeah, that's a better one. Thank you. Can we... Edit point. Enter now. Thank you.
I don't know. This is going to be really interesting to see. This is all going to... I mean, I think this next E3, it's all coming down, right? If they're talking about Christmas next year, a year from now, a new Nintendo console with Zelda as a launch title and Star Fox as a launch title, and, you know, oh man, crazy town.
I'd love it if the hybrid console really is just a home console, but then you're instead of like a memory card, it just saves it onto an amiibo, and like you can take it with you. Yeah. I'd still buy that amiibo though.
It's gonna be interesting to see if that take it with you part is just streamed, because stream seems to be the new.
That's not taking it with you though.
It isn't taking it with you. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see. My story of the week is also a Nintendo story. It's just a little nostalgia story. The NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, turned 30 yesterday. As of this recording, yesterday, October 18th, it turned 30. It was released in October 18th, 1985. The original Nintendo Entertainment System, basically resurrecting the console as a viable product to sell. The Atari crash had happened. There weren't such things as home consoles, and Nintendo launched in America with 18 games, including Duck Hunt, Ice Climber, Excite Bike, Super Mario Brothers, of course. I just wanted to kind of remember this. I don't know if you guys, we're all, I think, old enough to have memories of this actually happening. I had a friend who had one. I didn't actually have an NES. But I had a friend who did, and I remember when it first came out playing Gyromite and Duck Hunt for hours at my friend's house and just thinking it was the greatest thing ever. And we played Gyromite without Robbie the Robot. We played it as like a two-player game where one player just tries to squash the other player. Aaron, do you have any memories of the original NES?
Oh, I can tell you the exact time that I first played it and how it completely changed my entire life. So,
oh, please do.
Actually, I think it was until 89 that I played it. But I remember going to my family went to visit one of my parents' friends, and they had kids who were a couple years older than I was. And they had an NES, and I played Mario, and that was it. I was just done. You know, like I played that thing. I think we played all night. When I went to sleep, I could hear the music. I could see things moving. I mean, that happened to me the other night also. So it's, you know, nothing's changed. It's just 30 years later.
More of a mental disorder than anything else. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I remember it vividly because I had an Atari and I loved it. And, you know, I loved 2600 and I loved going to the arcade and all that kind of thing. But there was just something special about, for me, playing Mario for the first time that I hadn't experienced. And yeah, it was a big thing.
I love in the chat room when I was talking about, I had a friend who had one. Purple Hydra said, we all had a friend. That was pretty good. And then Sushi X says here in the chat, oh my God, I remember in 88, my parents bought one for us. Mario, Castlevania, and Duck Hunt were our first games. What about you, Christian? Did you have an NES?
Yeah, so two quick stories. One, this is more of just the times. And I know Toys R Us, they also often locked the games up and you'd pull the tag and you'd go wherever. But my friend, I was with him at the time. We were shopping. His name was Neil, and we were at Toys R Us and whatever, and got like He-Man toys or whatever it is. And then I don't think he was stealing. I mean, we were young, but I don't know. They had the Nintendos out, and he put one on the bottom of the shopping cart, and they just walked out with it.
So, and you don't think he was stealing?
Well, they gave it back. I don't know if it was you know, intentional. I think we were like however old we were, five or whatever it is. And he like picked it up, put it on while his mom was looking at something else. And then we walked outside and his mom's on, she's like, what's this? And Neil was like, it's a Nintendo. Just like all excited. And then we had to give it back. When we got ours, I remember how old I was. I know it wasn't launch day or whatever, but my dad's the best, you know, great relationship. Love the guy. He's sweet, but was a ship captain, so he was gone for months at a time on an oil tanker and whatever, and would come back and then be home for months at a time. So we would often play the game with him where he'd be home and our mom would be out, and we'd be like, hey, mom said it's cool if we have ice cream for lunch. Like, you're not normally here, so you don't know what to do. And so I think he also was playing that game, and he came home and was like, we had a ColecoVision before we had a Nintendo, and he came home and was like, guys, look what I got. I got you a new game. And he pulled out Donkey Kong, and we were like, yeah. Oh, Dad, we don't have an Nintendo. This is for Nintendo. We can't play it. And we were like, idiot, Dad. And, you know, he like relished in that moment for a little bit. And he was like, oh, you mean it doesn't work on that? And he already had it set up under the TV. And I mean, it was like poop explosions going on in that house. Like all of our insides just came outside. We were so excited. It was well done.
great dad moment.
And it awesome. Would have been a viral YouTube video. Thanks for not filming it, Dad.
Oh, why didn't he spend $700 on a VHS camcorder?
That's been hanging by like huge C-clamps from the ceiling to support it.
It was called Go Amateur at that time. Yeah. Yeah, 30 years. I can't believe it. I can't believe it's been 30 years since the NES. I don't know. I wish I knew what year my friend got it, because I don't think it was right at launch, because they say that there were only 100,000 of them at launch, and it really wasn't until a couple years later that they became really much more expanded, that they had a sort of national American launch that was – it was really more regional. It was sort of launched in New York. So very interesting. 30 years of NES this week. Pretty cool. Let me introduce one other quick story, because I know we have a lot of games to talk about, but I'm curious what you guys think. We've talked a lot about Steam machines on this show, and the first Alienware one and the Steam controller have hit the web as far as impressions go. I still have yet to try the Steam controller. I'm very anxious to. Not anxious enough to actually buy one, but I'm hoping to give
it
a shot.
If you want to send one, you can email Jeff at jeff@totallyradshow.com.
Yeah. I would love to try one, but I'm very skeptical about it. A lot of people have talked very positively about the haptic feedback that the controller has, but there's still, I think in general, all of the impressions that I read of the Steam machine, the Alienware Steam machine, are pretty mixed, and I've read a lot of them. Everybody is talking about how the form factor is pretty cool. It's evidently the size of a Wii U, which is very small for a powerful PC, which is cool. If the idea is to put this in the living room and not, you know, in the office, I think that's a great thing. But that overall, the menu system for Steam machines is still pretty clunky. Although that is going to change and evolve over time, but that the machine itself is not particularly impressive. Aaron, do you have you had any firsthand experience with either of these?
No, I haven't. And you know, this is the kind of thing that appeals to me. I think I said last time I was on the show that I'm not a PC gamer at all, and that's largely because I'm a Mac person, and I find that the thought of PC is just terrifying and scary. So this appeals to me in like, here, you know, you just kind of pick, you pick your thing out of the box, and this is what you got, and then hopefully it'll run the things you want to run. I really like sitting on my couch, and it's definitely interesting. I'd love to get my hands on one if anyone wants. You know, I'm at Entertainment Weekly. We have a really big audience. If anyone wants to reach out, I'll gladly check it out. It's definitely. I'm really curious, because I think this is the way that I would get my toes into PC gaming. One of these set top under the TV boxes.
Coloring Squared here in the chat said he tried the haptic feedback and it feels like the touchpad is creaking under your finger. I wouldn't consider that a positive response, but what were you going to say, Christian?
I just love the way you guys managed to set me up to play my role so perfectly. I kind of don't understand the appeal of these things, because the beauty – I love a small form factor PC. I love a PC that can sit under my entertainment center or whatever. But I feel like part of the appeal of a PC is that you're able to get in. You can tinker with things. You optimize so that your settings are just what you want them to be. You know, part of the joy of that community is you're tinkering with everything, turning on anti-aliasing, turning off whatever, and, you know, shadow detail high, and tinkering with these things. And then you get the Steam machine, or this Alienware, they also had one that's not tied to Steam OS, comes out. And I feel like you're in uncharted waters in a way that you don't know what you can run necessarily, because you're limited to something and you can't upgrade it. So you have kind of a great indie game machine maybe, but you're hoping that you can run Arkham Knight. That's a bad example. You're hoping you can run Metal Gear as optimized as it is on PS4, but oftentimes PC ports aren't optimized as well. So I don't know. It just feels like you have the headache of trying to figure out the settings to best run a game on your, mini PC without the joy, quote unquote, of realizing that you need to upgrade your graphics card or tinker with this and that. And if you want to sit on your couch and play games, what's wrong with the Xbox One or PS4 or Wii U? Are you really through all of those amazing games that you need more games to play? I don't quite understand. Like the Steam Link, the streaming thing, which unfortunately doesn't work with Mac still, I think is more appealing because that's opening up your PC to another screen in your house somewhere. I don't understand the appeal of this constrained PC.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I feel like it's a solution searching for a problem in a lot of ways. I mean, I think the argument is there are a bunch of great PC-only games that maybe you want to play on your big screen in your living room. One of the reviewers I read talked about playing Pillars of Eternity, for example, on the big screen. He said it was a pretty cool experience. So, you know, that's a thing, I guess. But from all accounts, it sounds like the support is sort of catch-as-catch-can. There aren't the 5,000 games at launch that they claimed there would be that support this SteamOS, because it's basically Linux. SteamOS is running on Linux. So there's a lot of games that are on Steam that don't work on SteamOS. And, you know, at least one of the people that I read, I think it was the Kotaku article, said that there's Alienware puts out basically a Windows PC that's in the similar form factor. Mm-hmm. So if you want this cool small thing, and you can still run Windows and not have to worry about compatibility issues with the SteamOS, and that, you know, big window mode, that's what it's called, right? Big screen mode? What is it called?
Big picture
mode. Thank you. That big picture mode works just as well, if not better than this new OS they're touting. So, you know, it's going to change, it's going to evolve, it's going to continue, but for now, it really sounds like these, for as long as we all said we wanted them, boy, they continue to just kind of underwhelm, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Talking about something that does not underwhelm, let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor, Lynda. Lynda is a great place to go if you want to learn something. Lynda is an incredible platform, truly. It's a repository. They have over 3,000 on-demand video courses with topics in business, technology, creative skills, so many things that you can learn: software programs, web design, photography, game design. If you're interested in getting into game design, they have all kinds of cool programs, from 3D modeling with specific software to HTML5 game development to lighting, just materials and lighting in Unity. Really, there is so much there. And these are professional classes made by experts in the field who know how to make videos. This isn't just a YouTube-esque kind of Wild West where any old person is throwing up garbage that, you know, you don't even know if it's accurate. These are all up to date. You know, they're talking about the most current version of the software. And the coolest part is you can search all of these courses. They're all transcribed, so you can do a text search, and then that will shoot you right to the exact minute and second in the video for the information that you want. So you don't have to sit through minutes and minutes of stuff you don't need. You don't have to scrub through the video looking for that morsel to get the answer that you want. It's very, very cool. And the best part is we're going to let you try it for 10 days completely free. You get your run of the site. There's nothing off limits to you. 10 days completely free. All you got to do is go to lynda.com/DLC. That's lynda.com/DLC. And try it out. We're going to give you 10 days to make sure that this is something that you want to pay for before you pay for it. I think you should just check it out anyway. Just go look at lynda.com/DLC. Find out how many amazing courses there are, how many things that you can do that really do help you do the things you already do, or learn a new skill altogether. Very, very cool. lynda.com/DLC. They make this show possible, and we think you should give them a shot. We want them to know that you heard about it here, so make sure you use that URL, Lynda, lynda.com/DLC. All right, dudes, lots of fun stuff to talk about in the playlist, so let's do that now. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist. Aaron, you and I have been playing Halo 5. Let's start there. Here's the thing. Microsoft, I'm sure, told you the same thing they told me, which is we can't give a review.
Right.
We can give a preview.
So of the first three chapters, and,
yes,
and chapter 8, oddly. I don't know how they came up with that.
Yeah, I don't know how they came up with that either. I haven't played chapter 8, but I did play the first three chapters twice.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you preview this game?
I think my preview is going to earn a 10 because I'm good at previewing. Aaron, what's your take on Halo 5?
So I played the first three chapters as well several times because I was doing some Twitch streams. And I have to say, I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm a longtime Halo fan. It totally reinvigorated my love of consoles back in 2001 when the Xbox came out. Mm-hmm. And it got me into multiplayer, LAN parties, all that kind of stuff. So this is the single player only. And honestly, that's my bread and butter of Halo. I love their campaigns. I think they do awesome stuff with the AI. I feel like when you play, you feel like you're this, just taking part in these enormous battles with so much stuff going on and so many different ways to approach them. And I think that these first few chapters of 5, they definitely are 343 is hitting on all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to echo a lot of the stuff that you said. I love Halo. I was thinking about it, and I never really thought about it in these terms, but other than Diablo, I think that Halo might be the only series that I've consistently played on multiple difficulty settings. There are a few games here and there that I've tried on different difficulties, but every single Halo I've played on multiple difficulty settings, and every single Diablo. Those are the only two series that I know for sure that are like that. And I think that says a lot about Halo and the certain magic that it has. And I was completely reminded of that magic as soon as I turned on Halo 5. Hopefully people saw my Twitch stream as well, twitch.tv/KanataJeff. First of all, this game screams new gen, right? It is so pretty.
New gen!
Yeah, exactly. Reclaimer! Yeah. It's so, so pretty. And it starts with this massively awesome cutscene that is in a lot of the commercials. And kudos to them for using like the first cutscene from the game for their commercials. But the cutscene is really well done. I heard it's in-engine, which is pretty spectacular.
Oh, wow.
And I believe it because the game looks that good. And then you start playing it and the frame rate is silky smooth. And I'm reminded how big a deal that is with shooters. It feels so smooth and fluid. And whatever it is about Halo, and I have sort of been off first-person shooters for a while. I played a bunch of Destiny, and Destiny is very fun. I'm not saying it isn't. But there's some special sauce in Halo, and I think that a lot of what it is they don't give you ammo. That they force you to improvise on the battlefield by forcing you to constantly change up your weapons. And I think that goes a long way into feeling what is special about Halo, which is all the different weapon types and sort of that like maestro of the battlefield where all these cool enemies are acting smart and you are taking part in this large battle that doesn't seem to be made just for you, but seems to be existing there anyway, and you're just a part of it, and you're running around, and maybe you're jumping into a warthog, and maybe you're picking up a big weapon, maybe you're picking up a little weapon, all that stuff. It feels more like this really cool creative improvisation of what I'm going to do next instead of, well, I got my perfect loadout, and I started the game exactly how I wanted to be, and I progressed down the corridor, and I shot the things. And I think that 343, at least in these first three missions, really nailed it. It feels modern and new and fresh, and I was having a blast with it.
I think the thing you guys both said, and you said it explicitly a little bit at the end, but you guys are really tipping your cap to 343. I think some people were concerned after Halo 4 that maybe they weren't the best people to carry the torch for Halo. They did a lot right, but it felt like they were just doing Halo, and then the new things they tried to do were a little bit of misses. But I feel like most of the praise you've been heaping on Halo 5 during this preview is, you know, all the things you love about Halo and how Halo makes you feel and how this game made you feel that Halo, which I think is some of the highest praise you can give a game, you know, that's still under a relatively new steward, right? I mean, if it makes you feel all the Halos and it's not Bungie, I think people are going to be pretty dang excited.
Yeah, well, they do a really cool thing too, and I wonder if this landed on you in the same way, Aaron, as it did for me. Is, and I guess this is a slight spoiler, but again, it's only the first three missions, and anybody that's seen the box art or knows the idea behind this game understands that it's really about Spartan Locke and Master Chief, right? And you play as both characters, and they do a really smart thing, which is the first mission, you play as Spartan Locke. And it's really cool. It's, you know, you're in this squad of four, and it's all built around four-player co-op, potentially, although I haven't played like that yet. But you're, you know, you're Spartan Locke, and you're doing cool Spartan Locke stuff. And then the second mission, you play as Master Chief. And for me, they're both Spartans, but they do something really cool. When you drop into Master Chief, it felt different. It felt like, oh yeah, he's the special one, Master Chief. This feels familiar and yet looks better than it's ever been. And seeing that battle rifle there in the HUD, and like how his visor is different and his waypoint marker is different, and like all that stuff. But it's different, but reminiscent of the old games in this cool nostalgia way that I was like, oh yeah, now I'm the guy. I thought that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because, you know, when you're playing it, they don't play any differently, kind of the same way in Halo 2, Arbiter didn't really control differently.
Right.
But there is something about it, and I can't figure out what it is either, because I feel like, you know, Chief does not have the most distinctive personality.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's like...
He doesn't have any personality.
Yeah, it's guy in green, you know, he cares about, like, Cortana, and I guess that's about it. But there was something to it, and I don't know if just because we've been playing it for so long and, you know, have such strong attachment to it, but I definitely felt the same way, because, yeah, when you get to the Chief, there's just, I don't know, it's just like, oh, and the other guy, that's cool. But, oh, no, yeah, here we go. Now we're really playing.
I want to see Chief's Tinder profile where it's like, likes, Cortana, dislikes, Flood, the library. That's good. And it's like three pictures of him with just like big Halos in the background, and then one of them says like, this could be us, but you playing, and you know, put a ring on it. He's real classy, real up with the memes.
He's good. And there's like a picture with him with no shirt on in the mirror, but he still has the helmet.
Oh, right, of course.
and the caption is like something totally not about his body. It's
it's like body evolved. I will say this, but the only I guess slightly negative thing, I was really loving it. And yes, there were a bunch of people on my stream who are like, sure looks like Halo. And I was like, that's not a bad thing. Halo is awesome. The only thing I will say is there's a whole lot of story going on at the beginning of this game, and I have no idea what's happening. I mean, none. Do you feel a little bewildered, or am I just like not up on my Halo lore?
Oh, no, I'm totally on board with you. I'm like, did I play Halos 1 through 4? Am I missing something? Like, there was something that I won't spoil, but the state of Halsey, which I saw that, and I was like, yeah, I don't remember that at all.
When did that happen? Yeah, exactly. Wait,
what's a Halsey? Like, I you know, it's been a while. I did play through parts of Halo 4 when the Chief Collection came out last year. But, you know, it's never really been the most narratively satisfying to me thing. I think it's a fun kind of, you know, popcorn movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not reading the novel companions or listening to the podcast to try to, you know, get and I get that people are totally into that, and I think that's really cool. But for me, it just doesn't, like, you know, it's like Covenant bad, Flood badder.
Yeah. Well, shoot. Covenant kind of not bad now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Forerunner's also bad. Forerunner. Basically, I'm shooting a lot of things. I don't know. But yeah, there's like in the first three missions, or in the second mission, there's this like almost dream sequence moment where you can tell there's something that has a lot of weight to it that happens. And somebody says a word that is, I think, supposed to have a lot of resonance for me. And I was like, I don't know what that is. She's like, she says this word, and they're like, oh no. And I was like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, but whatever, you know, it's fine. It's still fun. And that's the point, is like, it is so fun. And I'm really excited to to play through the rest and tell you guys what I feel about that. Hopefully it holds up over the course of the entire campaign.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, I really like the squad mechanic of having your three people with you at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, you know, because that's been since the beginning, like with in Halo 1, you know, you're driving up on the Marines and then they're screaming and dying in terror. But
right.
Your squad mates now, the Fire Team Osiris and Blue Team, they're pretty capable, you know?
Yeah.
And they can now revive you if you get downed, which I think is really helpful when you're playing by yourself.
Yeah,
I've been playing on Heroic, and you know I get down quite a bit, and it's nice when Frederick or Linda can come save me.
Oh, Linda! Yeah, I've been saying that a lot. Yes, I agree. And there's a lot of really cool new, just pure mechanics in the game. Like there's this cool like boosty thing you can do that I've found to be really fun. I didn't find it out until like halfway through my stream, but once I did, I really dug doing that. And the best thing is this cool new melee attack where you can, if you're running forward and try a melee attack, you like pop out into third person for a second and do a smash. People are saying it's Destiny-esque. It's kind of like the super moves in Destiny, but it's really cool. And in the first mission, you're in this like icy, snowy area, and there are these cool stalactites that cover up different areas, and you can like bust through them. And it is so satisfying. The way it feels is so satisfying.
Yeah, that and the ground pound too. If you can get a height advantage and then pound into like a pool of grunts, it's quite nice.
So lots more to talk about with Halo 5 over the next week or so, but early impressions from both of us are very positive. And I really honestly didn't anticipate myself being this enthusiastic about that game because it wasn't one of those must play games this year, but it has become that. I'm in that place where I'm looking forward to more sessions of it, so I like that.
Aaron, are you allowed to talk about your control input for this game?
I am not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you are allowed to talk about Yoshi's Woolly World.
Indeed.
Which is adorable and whimsical and beautiful, but is it fun?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I am a Yoshi's Island diehard. Like, that for me is a top 10 of all time game. I love it. I love the music. It makes me happy. And so I've been very, very skeptical about every subsequent Woolly World release because they've all been fetid garbage. And that last one, the 3DS one, was just terrible and depressing. And it's like, it just felt like a, you know, like, oh, so this is Yoshi's Island. It's not that hard. You know, we'll just do this. And it just didn't work. It felt soulless to me. So I'm very, very pleasantly surprised by Woolly World, which I found a delight from start to finish. I'm really, you know, and I, you know, because it was released in Europe this summer, and you know, so you could check out reviews, and the reviews have been, you know, like mixed to positive on the positive end, and so I was like, all right, you know, I'll just play through it, see what it thinks. I thought this game was just absolutely joyous to play. You know, the graphics are not, it's not just adorable, but it's, the world is so fully realized. Mm-hmm. The way that everything looks handcrafted. It's like I said in my review, it looks like Etsy exploded on your screen. And it's just, everything is so thought out. You know, the way like the Shy Guys unravel when you eat them, the way like the lava looks like a scarf that's moving across the screen.
It's
cool, really,
it seems
beautiful
to have like an internal logic. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the music is wonderful. I mean, I think Yoshi's Island has one of the best scores, and this one, the title screen is this like gently strumming acoustic guitar, and it just doesn't sound like anything else out there. Mm-hmm. In terms of like the gameplay, it's not the most difficult game. It's not like Donkey Kong Country where, you know, you're cursing at your TV. You know, if you want to just kind of race through it and hold right, you can do that. You know, I don't think it's as fun as if you try to collect everything, which I think is where they get the challenge in.
Yeah.
And one thing that I think is really smart is that there's actually a good incentive to collect things because you can unlock new Yoshi yarn skins. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty good incentive because they're freaking adorable.
Yeah, I was at my friend's house this weekend, and his girlfriend was playing, and she would come out of the room where she was playing every so often to just to get food or drink, and she'd be like, I just need to, I finished all the other level, but now I need to go back and I need to get that skin. I need to get the Yoshi skin. It's like, wow, this game has got its hooks in, man.
Yeah, yeah, crochet hooks.
Exactly.
Well, that's always how the Nintendo platformer and a lot of Nintendo games in general are structured, right? Where you can go through and get through the level, but that's almost not what Nintendo wants you to do. It's like, yeah, great, you did it, but at the end of the level, look at all these things that you didn't collect, and that really, really is where the challenge is, and some of them are too challenging, I think, but rewarding when you're able to get it.
Yeah, and, you know, they actually do some interesting, I think there's some, like, really interesting one-off levels, and you could, that could be a criticism that, you know, they introduce this kind of cool mechanic, and then you never see it again. But there's a part where you turn into a mermaid Yoshi, which, all right. and it's one of those timed sequences, kind of like the mole ones from Yoshi's Island. And it kind of feels like Echo the Dolphin. So you're just kind of, you know, you're racing through the water and you're, you know, skimming and doing flips and stuff and collecting things. And I just thought that was a delight because we'll never see another Echo ever again, sadly. But yeah, it tried a lot of things. I mean, I think if you like Yoshi's Island, I would definitely give Woolly World a spin because it really surprised me.
It sounds awesome. I hope it does well because I love these kind of aesthetic experiments, I guess you could call them. And you know, I guess this needs to be the big Wii U system seller for the
Yeah.
That's a lot of responsibility for a whimsical game like this, but whatever.
Yeah, but Yarn Yoshi Amiibo, I don't know. It's pretty good. So.
I bet you Yarn Yoshi Amiibo sells more copies than the game.
Probably.
I would almost guarantee that. Tell us about, Christian teased this at the beginning, but tell us about Forza with your Logitech wheel.
Okay, yeah. So I got this this Xbox One Logitech wheel to review. It's called the G920. So let me just preface this by saying I haven't driven since 2001.
Life?
Yeah, I live in New York. And
wow.
I haven't had a car since I graduated from college. And when I did, I had a Ford Tempo, so that was pretty cool. So I am not a driver. I usually drive once a year when I go to visit my parents at the holidays. And every time I
have you gotten the cool Subway token controller that they're putting out?
Yeah, you just sit there. It's a really fun game.
It smells terrible, too.
So they sent me this wheel, and I'm like, wow, I could not be less qualified. I'm also not, like, a car person at all. I love racing games, but I like arcade games. Like, I love Wipeout is one of my favorite series.
Ah.
I love the Wipeouts. I'm really sad that that's kind of on indefinite hiatus, because for me, those were, like Wipeout XL and 3 on PlayStation 1 were just sudden fantastic, awesome games with,
so
you know,
good.
Yeah. And, you know, we've totally gotten away from that. And then the next game, I like Burnout, also now on hiatus, because apparently people don't like awesome racing games.
I know, right?
So we're stuck with, like, you know, realistic things with, like, real cars. But so I was kind of like, eh, all right, Forza. I've never been into Forza. Like I said, the sim thing, just not for me. I know people love it. Like, Garnett Lee was always, you know, like the Forza guy and talking about
Christian
Gran Turismo. Oh, okay.
Right, Christian?
Yeah, continue. I just want to hear about how he's playing it the right way, and I'm stuck playing it with the crappy controller. Go ahead.
So, yeah. So, all that set up just to say, when you have a wheel and it's, like, kicking back against you, it kind of makes driving awesome. Like, I was enjoying Forza more than I ever thought I would because that wheel is ridiculous. Now, let me just put this out there. The price is ridiculous. It costs more than the consoles.
Oh,
you know?
Really?
Yeah.
How much is it?
It's $400. Ooh. And there's a version for the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4. And I think the Xbox One works with the PC. And the PS4 one works with the PS3 and maybe the PC. I'm not quite sure. But I'm testing the Xbox version. So it is very, very expensive. That said, I don't have to pay for car insurance, you know. I don't have to pay for, like, I don't have a loan payment. Like, I so I could see, if you are someone like me who, you know, lives in the city and has a small place and you miss driving, I actually see this being able to give you a little bit of that taste, because the first time I was trying one of the tracks that had, then it was raining, like, you can feel the way the feedback works And I didn't have it, you know, I don't have like a racing chair, even though I really looked into one because I was getting so into it.
Wow.
But that would never go. But the way it feels when it kicks, it, I mean, it felt like I was on, you know, the feedback, it, you kind of know what to do based on that feedback, which I was really, I thought was really impressive and immersive.
That's the thing I've always been wanting, man. I've been talking about that for years, right, Christian? The, this idea of like, when I drive in real life, very little of it, well, I mean, not very little of it, but a lot more of it has to do with what my body is feeling rather than what I'm seeing or hearing. And I always feel like for simulation games, that's a major detractor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's amazing. I mean, I've played with a wheel before, but I've played with like a $99 wheel, not a $400 wheel. So I bet that's a big difference.
Did they have any kind of like feedback with that, or was it just like
it had vibration?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because one really like it fights you. You know, you can like you can kind of like you kind of have to like hold your hand steady and fight with it, and it makes you it definitely makes it feel way more immersive. So like I said, you know, I for what it's worth, you know, I didn't pay for this; they sent it to me, and it you know, if you are hardcore into it, I think it'd be definitely worth checking out because it's nice too. You know, it smells like leather; it's got that like new car smell.
That's amazing.
I felt like getting like an air freshener and just like holding it over me. You know,
sounds like you miss driving a lot.
A little bit, once in a while.
So again, that's called the Logitech G920.
That's right.
My old Logitech wheel, I mean, it would fight too. Like I would be trying to move it into our new place and my wife would be trying to throw it away. And I really felt it kick. It was what an experience. That is the way to play though. I mean, if you have the space and you're serious about these sim games, you know, Gran Turismo or Forza or whatever, it makes the experience so much better. And $400, well, don't get me wrong, it is expensive, but if you put in, you know, we have people in the chat saying they spent, you know, thousands of hours playing Destiny, or you know, the amount of hours you playing Dota or something like that, and the investment that Jeff made on a comfy desk chair to sit in front of the computer for longer. If this is a platform,
that's an investment in my health.
Eh, not really.
It's fine.
Okay, great. So you won't end up like your dad at $500 nosebleed seats. Let me put it this way: if you were thinking about getting this wheel or any wheel like it, and you need someone to come up with a justification for you, send me an email or tweet at me, and I will put together the pitch doc for you.
What I want is somebody to make the combination wheel / Rock Band drum set / VR headsets. Like, just let me have one thing that I just stick in a place, and it looks extremely ugly, but at least it's just one thing, you know? I'll be happy.
Yeah, it's the combo that really kills everything. And they don't stack nicely, you know?
Well, that's the problem. If the combos stack together, imagine the score multiplier you'd get at the end.
Ah, oh, that would be so great. Awesome. Very cool. Christian, on your what's on your playlist there?
So two things I want to talk about. Both will be relatively quick. Minecraft Story Mode, Episode 1, is out now from Telltale Games. I know, Jeff, you played through it. I was part of the world's largest Let's Play ever at Arclight Hollywood at the Dome, which...
Can they say that? I don't know if they can say that. Because, like, isn't Twitch Plays Dark Souls or whatever? Isn't that technically larger?
I'm using their words. I don't know. This was more of a CF than Twitch Plays, though, because the game, the engine wasn't modified, right? So it's the game, and you get to the choices, X, Y, whatever, you know, to select your things. And it was just like, everybody in the theater, yell out what you want.
Yeah.
And but then the
that
person
worked well.
Yeah, the person playing the game just picked whatever they were going to pick, let's be honest. but we played through the entire first episode. It's about 2 hours, which I feel is shorter than the other Telltale. Man, I have a hard time saying that. Alliteration. There are other games. I think if you're a fan of the series, of the IP, this is something that you will like and really enjoy. It was really fun sitting in the theater. There are a bunch of kids there with their parents, and it was really cool when, you know, like creepers or enemies appeared on screen, and the kids would be like, "Mom, that's the creeper." And
that's
like
the thing I've been telling you about to blink stares for the last 3 years.
It really was. And I heard like some parents going like, "Oh, that's," and they're like, "Yeah." And it was really cool. So I think if you're kid is really into Minecraft, this is a game that you guys could sit down and play together. And if it's not a whole theater yelling the answer, you know, you could sit there with them and be like, what do we do, Sue? Or whatever. That dumb rhyme. What do we do, Jen? And then they pick, and I think it could be really fun.
Make a new plan, Stan. No need to be coy, Roy.
Watch your back, Jack. Anyway, how much time do we have left on the show? Let's just keep this pun train rolling. The game itself, I don't think, is as good as some of the other games that they've made, but part of that might be that I'm not connected to the IP the way I was with some other games. But I also think if you play enough of these games, you start to see how similar they all are, and I really want them to take a break from how they do these games. And I think they tried in Jurassic Park, and that game kind of flopped for them, so they go back to it. What I'm saying is The Walking Dead, it worked really well where you're this group and there's infighting within the group and you're trying to survive and you have someone that's a hothead and someone that just wants to hide in a corner and you're trying to navigate this dangerous world with this group that all has their own opinions as how they should survive in this dangerous world. And so you get these gray area decisions between a group, and I think it worked really well in that IP. In Minecraft story mode, not spoiling the story, it feels a little weird to me when you're this group of like fun-loving kids. Yes, there's a problem in the world, but I'm growing tired of seeing infighting within your group. It's like, oh, here's the hothead character that's going to always want to rush out into danger, and we're going to kick someone out of the group. Of course we're going to kick someone out of the group, because it's a Telltale game, and we always kick someone out of the group. This person's going to wait outside, but oh, we probably want them later. And it's this thing where there are other ways to do cool narrative storytelling, and I wish that they would take a risk, because it feels very familiar in terms of the formula for how these things work. My other big problem for these games now that I don't know if it can be fixed, I would think so, but they don't sound like real conversations, in that the conversations, the characters talk slowly, and then when they're done talking, there's a pause before the other person speaks. What do you think, Jeff?
So you're saying that the entire game is recorded over Skype?
Maybe. That's a great... And it's this thing where people don't talk like that. You know, they're jumping in on each other, or conversation starts and there's overflow. And I think maybe the games are structured this way so that you can listen to the choices, because that's the whole game. And if you miss something, you're like, oh no! But it makes it feel plotting to me in a way that doesn't feel natural. Again, though, if you are a fan of these games and you are a fan of this IP, I think there's a lot that you'll enjoy about Minecraft story mode. But if you're growing
for kids, right?
I think it is. If you're growing tired of these games and Minecraft isn't your thing, you know, pick up the season finale of Tales from Borderlands and enjoy that, because that's them doing what they do so well, you know?
Yeah. You've also been playing more of the Uncharted collection, right?
Yes. So real quick on Uncharted Collection, there's all these things about how, you know, Aladdin is the bad guy in that movie, if you break it down, or Marty is the bad guy in Back to the Future. Nathan Drake, after replaying these three games, is a huge jerk. Like, not in that it's a murder simulator. He's a horrible human being that just gets by on his good looks and charm. So spoilers for the beginning of all three of these games. Uncharted 1. You're there with Elena, whatever. And then pirates start showing up. And she's like, why don't we call the cops? And he's like, well, we could if we had a permit to be here. But we don't. So we'll get arrested because we're stealing artifacts from Panama. Like, you're filming a TV show and you didn't take the time to get your permits right? Come on, Drake. And then he kills all these pirates because he didn't do his job right and get a permit. And then he immediately strands her and leaves her behind. Jerk. Uncharted 2. Uncharted 2 opens with Nathan meeting his old friend and his old girlfriend on the beach, and they invite him to come along on this awesome adventure. And Nathan's like, this sounds great. I'm so excited to do this. Cut to 2 seconds later, he's already sleeping with his friend's current girlfriend, he thinks at the time, and scheming for a way to backstab his friend and make off with the treasure. Like, granted, his friend ends up screwing him over worse later, but at the time, Nathan didn't know that. Nathan's like, this sounds like a great adventure. So good to see you, Bill. Let's screw over Bill. He'll never know. Jerk. Uncharted 3 opens with Jerk Kid as a little kid, and what is he trying to do? He's trying to rip off Sully and steal this artifact from a museum for who knows why. And Sully's like, hey, kid, be careful. You're going to get in with the wrong crowd. These guys are dangerous. Dude, no one is more dangerous than an 11-year-old that somehow ended up in a South American country stealing crap from other white tourists and then stealing national treasures because they want them. Jerk. He's a jerk.
Can't wait for that Halo, that Uncharted 4, though, right?
Don't get me wrong. Uncharted games are some of my favorite games of all time. Replaying them was a joy. The aiming tweaks they made for Uncharted 3 make that game with its, I think, somewhat questionable enemy encounters far more playable. I really, really love the games. But that character, I'm hoping at Thief's End, it's like Sully's just like, Nathan, you're a jerk.
Enough.
And then he kills
enough
him.
With you.
Yeah.
So,
that's the end of the day.
But you recommend the Uncharted Nathan Jerk collection?
It's really good with some jerk chicken, too. It's a delicious, delicious meal.
Awesome. We haven't done this in a while, but I want to read a story of glory, tale of fail. We get the people send in the stories of glories and tales of fails to our email address, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I love this one, and I wanted to make some time to read it. This was sent in from L. She writes, hi guys, I loved playing Final Fantasy, and number 10 was one of my favorites on the PlayStation 2. It was a wonderful game, but I found some of the boss battles to be really hard, despite training my party and leveling them up with new abilities. One fight in particular made me very frustrated. Spoilers about who the bad guy is for Final Fantasy 10, but it was the fight against Seymour on a clifftop. No matter how well I prepared, he was able to decimate my entire party with a combination of zombie spells and full party attacks. So I went to my friend, who was also into Final Fantasy, and asked for his advice. This was nice, as I also had a little crush on him, and it gave me an excuse to talk to him about something we had in common. He told me he'd managed to get through the fight without any trouble at all. I couldn't believe it, but he advised me that if I went into the battle with all of my Aeon's overdrives around me, a monster just jumped out of my throat. Pardon me, guys. if I went into the battle with all of my Aeon's overdrives ready, then I'd kill Seymour easily. So I went back and tried this strategy. It definitely helped, and I was able to do some serious damage. But in the time I lost between one Aeon dying and the next being summoned, Seymour still kept killing me with a full party attack. Ultimately frustrated, I invited him over to my place so he could coach me through the battle. He came over one evening, and after meeting my parents and eating some of my mom's cupcakes, we went upstairs and loaded the game. We watched the cutscene. The battle started. I followed the same strategy that I did before, but this time, it actually worked. One by one, I summoned my Aeons and hit Seymour with their overdrives. And for some reason, Seymour did not wipe my party before I could summon the next one. By the time I'd summoned Yojimbo, Seymour was history, and all of my party members were still alive. I couldn't believe it had been so easy. My friend turned to me and said, "Did you just use this battle as an excuse to get me over here?" I was mortified. I promised him that wasn't the case and that the battle had really been frustrating me this whole time. He said he believed me, but I suspected he secretly didn't, and I felt really embarrassed. Anyway, now it's 11 years later, and we're happily married and reliving this game with the HD remaster. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. We love your show. I think that she doth protest too much. They're married now. This is the greatest tale of the story of glory ever, right? She couched it as a tale of fail that she was mortified. I say it led to happy nuptials. I think that's beautiful.
And she definitely did it on purpose, though.
Oh, yeah. Classic Final Fantasy move.
you read about it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Also, smooth move on that dude for being like, I mean, just like the Nintendo discussion, we all had a friend who had Nintendo. We also all had a friend who could beat Zelda in one life and could get through Final. Oh, that's easy. You just got to load. I'll come over and do it for you. Let daddy get to work. You know, he's probably like leaning over her like the way you teach a girl, quote unquote, to play pool. You know, he's like, babe, put your hands on the controller like this.
I love how he came over and then he like got free dinner and met the parents out of it, too, and had some cupcakes. Like, usually if you come over to play a game, you're there for like 20 minutes. You see the thing, and the person's like, "All right, I got the rest. I got it. You can go now." No. You got like the full royal treatment. That's pretty good. She was definitely marriage material. I'll just say that
for sure.
All right, guys, let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time. Guys, I had one of the greatest days of tabletop gaming of my life this week. It was incredible. So, frequent listeners of the show know I've talked at length about Risk Legacy, which is a version of Risk that came out a few years ago, and changed up the formula to create a sense of persistence. So it's really a game that's meant to be played with the same group of people over multiple sessions. So you have you play a full game of Risk, and then based on certain conditions, you're able to directly change the game. You write with ink pen on the board for certain things. You tear up cards. You open mystery packages that
are one of the instructions then, go buy another copy of the game. You just ruined this one.
Well, it was very controversial when it was released because of that. I mean, people like me who are very into board games and want to keep their games pristine, you know, one of the biggest things – excuse me. I don't know why that monster keeps coming out of my throat. One of the biggest things that you can buy on for your board games is like protective sleeves for your cards and stuff. People are really into that stuff, like making sure stuff doesn't get bent or torn, and to actually have the game instruct you to rip things up and destroy parts of the board and stick stickers on things that are permanent and draw with ink on other stuff. It was very controversial. Well, now one of my favorite co-op games ever, Pandemic, which is a game we've talked about on the show as well. There's a new Pandemic Legacy from the same designer, Rob Davio, teamed up with Matt Leacock, the original designer of Pandemic, and brought this legacy concept to Pandemic. Now, Risk, I'm sure everybody knows, Risk is a very cutthroat adversarial game where you are, you're trying to take over the world and you have armies and you're fighting each other and it is just dog eat dog. You are screwing over the other members that are playing with you. And the legacy version is, you know, amps up that stakes even more because if you win, you get to change the game. You get to add new rules. You get to make decisions. You get to name stuff. You get to name continents and cities and draw with ink and, you know, write. You can, you know, taunt your enemies. But with Pandemic, everybody's working for the same goal, which is save the world. You're all on the same team. It's a cooperative game. So the legacy concept here, I was very excited about because it removed all of that sort of ugliness, I guess you could say, all of that, the backbiting, and it made us all want to affect the game in positive ways and work together, which made for a very fun day. So Pandemic Legacy just came out. My friends and I got together and played. It was three of us. We got together and played 7 games in a row. We started at 10 a.m. and we ended at about 10 p.m. So we had 12 hours playing the same board game all in one day. And I have to say, that's like the best way to experience this game. Because the thing that Pandemic Legacy does that I've never seen a board game do in this way or as well at all in any way is it tells a story. This is an incredibly amazing evolution of this idea. It starts as the pandemic that we all know and love, which is you're traveling all around the country. You're trying to stop the spread of disease. You're trying to come up with cures for these diseases. And what it layers on, it starts to layer things on top of that original game very quickly. And the layers are brilliant and they tell a story. And there are like twists and there are giant revelations and you're opening these boxes that come with the game that add new pieces to the board. You're getting new rules. You're getting new characters. You're getting it through the course of playing the game. You're getting a cinematic story that's told to you, but not told to you in the way that any other board game tells a story. Most board games, if they're trying to tell a story, you're going to read text that is narrative. This game has a little of that, but the story isn't told that way. The story is told based on what new things come into the world and new changes happening around the globe and the stuff that you are affecting, the legacy of that. It is incredible. I want to tell you guys so much more, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I will say this. The game evolves into something completely different, which is, as it's happening, we were all like exclaiming out loud. We couldn't believe it. And I truly would recommend, if you have never played Pandemic, I don't think this is the first Pandemic to buy. I think you should really play the original co-op Pandemic game. You can play this game as that if you don't start with any of the legacy stuff. So they actually suggest, if you've never played Pandemic before, the game rules suggest you should play at least two games before you introduce any of the legacy concept. But if you have played Pandemic before, I can't recommend this higher, especially if you like that game. But I totally recommend trying to at least power through the first three or four games all in one sitting. Because experiencing that narrative progression all at once and knowing what happened to the last game and having it fresh in your mind when you start the next game, it, I think, added so much to our play experience. It is for 1 to 4 players. We played it with 3. You could probably play it with 2. I wouldn't suggest playing it with 1. I'm not sure. Maybe it doesn't support 1. Anyway, 2 to 4 maybe. You can play with 2. I think it's better with 3 or 4. I wish we had played it with 4. 3 is pretty great. Guys,
with 2. I mean,
so
3
amazing.
Or 4. You can do 4 or 3 or 2 or 1 or lift off or Houston, we have a problem, or 2 or 1.
He's just saying, just play it. Play.
Yeah, basically play it.
Have either of you guys played Pandemic?
Yeah, I have one time. That's it, though. And I'm not a big board game person, but yeah. I liked it as far as that went. It seemed about the level of complexity I could handle.
Yeah, it's a great game for people that aren't really into designer board games. You know, it very much easy to introduce. The rules make sense. There's not a lot of them. I will say this, part of the reason that I only recommend this to people that already know how to play Pandemic is one of the things that happens is the game introduces new rules very rapidly and it as the games progress, and is a lot to keep in your mind. I know we screwed up at least one of the games, the rules a little bit. So it's one of those things where if you don't have experience with the actual base game and understanding how that works, it's a lot to swallow all at once when the game really starts iterating and changing and evolving. And there are quite a number of things that happen very quickly. I mean, there's, I will say this, this isn't a spoiler. There is a moment that happens in the middle of a game. They tell you to put, it even comes with this reminder token, and it tells you to put the reminder token on the board in a specific place. So halfway through one of the first games, you have to do something that completely changes the game. So you're literally in the middle of a game and everything that you've been doing up to that point is altered, which right there, that moment is, I think, unmatched as far as a board game experience. It is like everything that I have experienced playing board games up to this moment didn't prepare me for this. Like, this is a new thing that happens. And it's so, so cool. And where the game goes, and I mean, we can't wait to get back and play through the rest of the it's separated into months, right? So you start the first games in January, the last games in December on the board, and each game you play moves forward 1 month. And if you fail, if you don't save the world, you have to replay that month. And we went 6 games without losing, and then lost 2 in a row. So the last 2 games we played, we lost both of them. So we had to replay June, but now we're on July. So even though we lost again, we still progressed to July. And I can't wait to play the second half of the game. People that listen to this show know that Rob Davio, the designer, is a friend of the show, has been on more than once with us talking about these games. I would love to talk to him again now that I've experienced this. But I was tweeting back and forth with him as we were playing, and he was very much talking about the game in terms of act structure. Like he said, when we finished game four, he was like, that is the end of act one. And it very much feels that way, and it's incredible. It's incredible, you guys. I can't recommend it higher.
I feel like right now someone listening to you talk about this game is yelling at you about the same way when they get to play Halo 5 about that, whatever that thing. You're like, this is supposed to have weight. The way you're like, this changed the game. Someone's like, yeah, Jeff, that's what happened in Halo. You just didn't know the story. It changed the game. Where it seems like this game is amazing if you're, one, know and invested in the old game in terms of its rule structure. And then two, if you're able to really hunker down and play it, where I feel like, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles. I know we have an email, I don't know if we'll get to it today, but you know, like get how to teach people rules of new games and stuff like that. And I think sometimes the biggest hurdle for these designer board games is you need to pay attention, and even not for Pandemic Legacy, right? Just for Pandemic, where so many of the American or table trash or whatever, you know, slurs thrown at these other traditional board games that kids grew up playing, they're kind of like checking Twitter, where you can kind of, my turn, landed on Boardwalk, oopsie doopsie, and then you're talking to your friend and eating dip the rest of the night. And a lot of these designer games, you can't do that.
Well, I've been told that I was misusing the term Ameritrash, which is supposed to be a term of endearment on games that have sort of trashy themes and are selling more of the theme than they are the mechanics. And that Monopoly technically isn't Ameritrash, that Ameritrash game is like a crazy battle game, but the mechanics are just kind of, you know, just there, and it's all about the theme. So, but yes, I think you're right. I think your analogy would be if Halo, in the middle of a mission, all of a sudden, now you don't shoot guns. You know? I mean, it's not quite that big, but it really changes the fundamental mechanics of the game in a big way. I mean, I may be overstating it, but it changes the goal. It changes the way you play. It's pretty significant. So,
yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. I will talk more, although it's hard to talk about these games because it's a board game that has spoilers. Like, you can spoil the experience of this game. Some of the people in the chat are asking, let me see where it is, if you can still play it after you've played through the entire Jicky Jack said, can you continue to play after you complete the game? So minimum number of plays is 12. That's if you win every match or win every round. Maximum would be 24. You're probably going to play somewhere between 12 and 24 games. I would argue that most people don't play any of the board games they own between 12 and 24 times. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. And the experience itself is extremely rewarding. Risk Legacy was designed so that by the end of it, you have this altered version of Risk that's specific to you and your group. And you can still play Risk as you normally would, but it has the battle scars of, you know, of this campaign that you went through. This is different. Pandemic Legacy has a beginning, middle, and end. And after it's over, reportedly, again, we haven't gotten to the end, but reportedly, when you get to the end, it's done, which is why they're selling it in two versions. They're selling a blue version and a red version. The versions are identical in the box, but they colored the boxes differently so you can have two, so you know which one's which.
Yeah.
Interesting. The other thing that's interesting is it's called Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Oh.
No idea what that means. I have no idea what that means. So, but it does, you know, it does feel more like, when we played it 7 times in one day, it did feel more like binge watching a television show than anything else. It felt like we were going through watching a season of a TV show. It was amazing.
It's very cool.
Thank you for indulging me that, because guys, it truly amazing day. 12 hours of gaming.
That's crazy.
Stop it for only a couple of food breaks. Yeah, it was a little nuts.
Oh, real quick, what was the food du jour?
Well, it was whatever was nearby. We had a wrap. We had wraps for lunch.
Okay.
And then I had breakfast for dinner, because why not?
Great. Perfect.
Gotta have breakfast for dinner. Yeah. It was a blast. Okay, let's move on. We have a parting gift to leave you with this week, as usual. But let's wrap up this episode. Aaron Morales, thank you so much for spending time with us again. Always awesome to hang out with you and hear your gaming stories. Where can people keep up with you during the week?
You can check out me on Twitter. I'm at AirlineM. You can also check out my games writing at ew.com/gaming. We have a little page, a little hub on our website for that. And also, I'm going to try to do some more Twitch streaming of Halo 5 this week. And that's also at AirlineM.
Yeah, awesome. That was the first time I had ever Twitch streamed on Xbox One. And I found it to be actually kind of better than the PS4 experience.
Yeah, I haven't done much either. And it worked pretty well, except for that every time someone joined, they would be like, how are you playing this now? Where'd you get this?
Yeah, I know. I got that. Well, what happened to me was I started off with a nice group of people that know me because I, you know, tweeted it out. And then somebody else like posted a link, some Twitch guy like posted a link like, hey, this dude's playing Halo 5 right now. And then I got this swarm of people who had no idea who I was. And then it was just like insults and yelling and stupid. And yeah.
Did you know that you're terrible at that game?
Oh, I do. Know that. I do know that. Now I know it better, but I knew it even going in.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Our friend David Ellis, who is a designer on the game and works at 343, was hanging out in the chat as well, and he was giving me tips. And I played a level that he designed, and he was like, if you go around back here, you find that, and maybe you should try this. And it was great. But I felt especially bad at Halo when I was watching a designer was watching me play.
That's funny.
Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, I am at Spicer on Twitter, S-P-I-C-E-R. I also have been diving into the Twitch world casually but regularly. Thursdays at 1:30 Pacific, I jump on. It is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. I think I'm going to start adding Monday, so when we're doing this live, also at 1:30, I'm going to play more Rise Against the Empire playset for Disney Infinity 3.0, get my Star Wars hype going.
Nice.
And then I will be at the Scottsdale Laugh Factory November 19th through 22nd doing a whole bunch of shows. I'm out there with Dean Del Rey. We also do a podcast together on all things comedy Tuesdays at 2:30 called Bitchin'. It goes out on his RSS feed, Let There Be Talk. But that's the Scottsdale Laugh Factory, 19th through 22nd is the time for people not in LA, if you're out that way, to come see a show. What about you, Jeff? What's going on?
Well, I got my usual slash film cast ramblings about movies, and I'm sure the guys will be talking about the new trailer tonight. We're recording an episode on Steve Jobs, which will be fireworks, because I already know that Dave hates it and I love it. So you're going to want to hear
that. I saw his tweets. You guys had some good tweets back and forth.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting one. And then we have Concerns is the comedy show I do with Anthony Carboni. We will have new episodes all week as usual, three episodes a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They're 20 minutes or less usually. So easy for you to check out. It's at weHaveConcerns.com. All right, dudes. Let's get to a little parting gift for the people.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Aaron, you have a suggestion to get people through their week?
I do. So, Jeff, have you ever heard of Geeks and Sneaks?
As a matter of fact, I have. It's a movement that's sweeping the nation.
It is. They are running the world. Soon they will be running the world. So I used to be a pretty avid runner about 7 years ago, and then I really, really messed up my back. You know, had some slip discs, got to the point where I had to go to physical therapy and stuff.
Thanks for the 49ers tickets, Jeff.
You know, that's a second reference to that, and you know that was in a pre-show, and no one knows what you're talking about.
I know, and I can't help it. It's too funny.
Anyway, so I'm in a wheelchair now. No, so I have been trying to get back into running, and one of my favorite things to do is listening to this very podcast. So
thanks.
I just want to say that it is a really good way to I'm doing one of the Couch to 5K things, because I haven't run a 5K in 5 years. So it's tough and it's getting cold. I don't know why I picked now to start. But, you know,
awesome. I saw it on your Twitter feed.
Yeah.
You're in week four, right?
Yeah. I just finished week four.
That's awesome. How are you
so far? So far, my back is holding up. That's I'm trying to be very conscious of it, just because I don't want to have to, you know, start hobbling again. And you know, I was thinking like, oh man, last time I ran, I was like 10 years younger. Like, a lot's changed since then. So no, it's good though, and it's a good feeling. And I think if it starts out pretty easy, if you know, so if anyone feels like they can't do it, you can. It just hurts a lot.
I think that's so awesome, and I applaud you. I wasn't going to read this email, but I got this email this week too from Jack. This said, I listen to DLC every week, and I remember your YouTube post back in the TRS days about running the LA Marathon and was inspired to do the same. After a year and a half of training, I just finished my first San Francisco Marathon. Just want to let you know that you have inspired people like myself to accomplish things that I never imagined I would. I think that's awesome. And I'm so happy that this Geeks and Sneaks thing is inspiring people to do stuff like that. And the thing that I have experienced in my life is when you do something that you didn't think you could do, it's the best feeling in the world. And I don't think that a geeky lifestyle and being sedentary and out of shape have to go hand in hand. You really can. It just takes a little bit every day. That's all. So awesome.
Yeah. I'll echo that. I was really good in college, had knee problems, slowly getting back into it. And I had 4 mile loop outside my house that I do 3 times a week. And from the first time I ran it to now, I've clipped off, granted, I went really slow the first time just to feel the aches and pains, clipped off 6 minutes, and I'm doing easy runs sub 7 minute again. So I'm,
nice.
I'm back, baby. I listen to the Beast Cast while I run, 'cause I do this show. So
it doesn't have to be running either. You know, I talk about running mostly because I like it, but also it's the easiest thing. Like it requires the fewest number of stuff, I find. You know, you just some shoes and an outdoors. But you know, it can be anything. And I really hope, people take up the challenge. Did you have a parting gift other than that, Christian?
I mean, I've talked about all the great stuff I love from them, but I love Mondo tees, Mondo posters. Mondo is into the vinyl game now. They did a Last of Us vinyl. They're doing a Back to the Future vinyl collection that goes live. It's annoying how you have to buy the stuff because it's all limited, and they send out a tweet that's like, live now, and then you go and buy it. But their stuff is beautiful. I have a Batman animated series poster coming my way that I picked up from them. And then I think I tweeted out or Instagrammed out the picture for Batman 66. They have a whole series, all different artists, but this one was of Batgirl, which is just beautiful. I love it so much. And coming up, I think the 21st, they're doing the vinyl Back to the Future trilogy soundtrack on vinyl with just beautiful art. And if you like this show, I'm sure you will like something that Mondo has done. So just check it out if maybe you don't know about them. They do really, really quality stuff.
Awesome. I wanted to hip everybody to a TED Talk that my wife actually recommended to me, and it just completely affected me. It changed my day when I listened to it, and I hope it changes yours. I hope you give it a shot and listen to it. It's free. I think it's the most recent TED Talk that is on their podcast stream. If you look at the TED Talk Society and Culture iTunes stream, it's the one from Martin Pistorius, and it's called How My Mind Came Back to Life. It is extraordinary. This fella had a debilitating disease and was basically considered to be a vegetable, but what he describes is the fact that his mind was still active and he could hear and perceive everything around him, but everybody didn't know that. He was kept alive and he was unable to move or speak in any way. And I won't tell you any of the details of what happened because I think he says it so much more eloquently than I, but basically technology gave him a way to communicate, and it is moving and powerful and inspiring, and it only takes about 12 minutes to listen to the whole thing. I think it's the best 12 minutes you'll spend all day, and it will probably make you appreciate your life. It will probably make you complain a lot less that day. It certainly did to me, and it will probably make you just feel better. So I highly recommend it. It's the Martin Pistorius TED Talk. Check it out. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thank you to Aaron Morales and Christian Spicer. Thank you to Maggie and Dan and Hattie and all the folks at 5x5 for making this possible. Thanks to our chat room. You guys have been great this week. We really appreciate all the stuff. If you have a chance to listen to our show live, hang out in the chat room because these guys have been having great conversations. People were talking about which games they were going to buy this holiday season and which ones they were going to pass up. All kinds of stuff that we didn't have room to reference directly in the show, but great discussions with great people happening in our chat room every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. And thank you for downloading the show and listening. If you want to give us a nice review on iTunes, we certainly appreciate that. It helps spread the word of the show. Or just tell your friends. Tell your friend directly that you like listening to DLC. It helps us get the word out and means a lot to us as well. We'll talk to you again next Monday. The holiday release schedule is heating up. We got lots of fun stuff coming up very soon. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Music, 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 music.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.